U.S. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy appeared before both Senate and House committees over the last few days. DeJoy only took the job a short time ago, but big changes to the Postal Service have happened under his watch, as well as some observable downturns in delivery service. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called representatives out of recess to an emergency session to address the problems. Don Kettle is the Sid Richardson Professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin, where he's focused on public management and policy. He's a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He is a former professor at UW-Madison, and a state commission was named after him here in the state. Don's latest book is called The Divided States of America, Why Federalism Doesn't Work. Don, welcome back to Central Time.
It is so good to be with you, Rob.
Well, DeJoy faced some tough questioning from Democrats in these appearances, including Representative Katie Porter of California. Here's a little bit of their exchange.
Do you know about within a million or so, can you tell me how many people voted by mail in the last presidential election?
No, I cannot.
To the nearest 10 million?
I will.
Is that a no, Mr. DeJoy?
I would be guessing, and I don't want to guess.
Okay, so Mr. DeJoy, I'm concerned. I'm glad you know the price of a stamp, but I'm concerned about your understanding of this agency. And I'm particularly concerned about it because you started taking very decisive action when you became Postmaster General. You started directing the unplugging and destroying of machines, changing of employee procedures, and locking of collection boxes.
So, Don, we have the situation where the post office and the Postmaster General have become controversial. What do you make of these sometimes heated exchanges in front of Congress?
Well, there are a couple of things going on here. The first is that quite obviously this has become a political football between the Democrats and Republicans. The president in particular concerned that the Democrats are going to try to expand vote by mail, which he thinks at least would advantage the Democrats. The Democrats, on the other hand, saying that anybody ought to be able to vote any way that they want. So it's become about voting. But there's a much bigger set of issues here about the future of the postal office that is lurking in the background here. So it's been really budding for a long time. That's all come to a head here together in the election campaign.
Yeah, let's broaden our lens here and look at the Postal Service and how it operates. It's expected, in effect, correct me if I'm wrong, Don, to be a revenue-neutral service. Why the post office, out of the many things that the government does, why did this one become a revenue-neutral, supposed to be self-funding service?
Once upon a time, there was the post office, and when it became the U.S. Postal Service, USPS, the expectation was that it would break even, that we would set the postal rates in a way that would ensure that it would generate enough revenue to cover its costs, and that it would not be a drain on the taxpayers. The argument was that it should be just like an ordinary business, and as an ordinary business, ought to break even. But the challenge since is that so much has conspired to undermine its ability to be able to do that, that the rise of fax machines, the rise of email, the rise of FedEx and UPS, the rise of just the spread of email and social media now, to the point that it's very hard for the Postal Service to generate enough money to be able to do that. And on top of that, back in 2006, there was a policy decision made that the Postal Service would have to cover all of its pension obligations out for the next 75 years. So the combination of the decline in service on the one side, shrinking number of people actually using regular first-class mail, and on the other hand, the rising expenses because of the pension has really put the Postal Service in a terrible bind in terms of finding a way to break even.
And there's been an argument with especially the rise of the internet that, well, maybe the Postal Service is at least partially obsolete. It's not the vital function to communication that it was when it was, you know, put in the Constitution that Congress had the power to make some kind of postal delivery system. Is there a case to be made there?
Well, it's certainly a much different kind of case than it would have been 5 years, 10 years, 20 years ago before the rise, especially of the internet and social media. But on the other hand, there are lots of places in the country where it's hard to get internet service. There are lots of things that lots of communities that really depend on the post office for the delivery of all kinds of stuff. There is certainly the importance of the Postal Service in distributing advertising, but in lots of ways, there's everything from, say, prescription drugs that are delivered by U.S. Postal Service. That doesn't work real well on the internet. And there are increasing interactions between, say, Amazon and the Postal Service in terms of delivering lots of packages to lots of places that people increasingly depend on, along with the basic fact that there's been a principle from the very beginning. If you put a letter in the mail, for example, here in Austin and send it to Madison, it costs 55 cents. If you send it from Austin here across the street, it costs 55 cents. You have a basic principle, as there has been for a long time, that anybody can write to anybody anywhere for the same price as a way to try to keep the country together. And that principle certainly hasn't changed at all.
Talking to Don Kettle from the University of Texas, Austin, about the United States Postal Service in a touchy political time. The Postmaster General testifying before Congress over changes there. You can join in with your thoughts about the role of the U.S. Postal Service at 800-642-1234. Well, now we have this pandemic, Don, and a lot more people in primaries so far voting by mail, an expectation that we'll have a lot of mail-in voting. And questions about how the postal system is going to deal with all of those ballots. What are you watching for there?
It's just a fascinating story. The Postmaster General was asked the other day how many ballots were cast by mail in the last election. The one thing we really don't even have a good idea about is how many will be cast by mail this election and whether or not the post office can handle it. And on the one hand, the basic question is if, in fact, the post office, the Postal Service, makes the right kind of decisions, that is, allows overtime, prioritizes the ballots coming through, and doesn't engage in a conscious effort to try to stop that, then in fact the ballots will get through. But on the other hand, at this point, we've already seen, according to some recent internal Postal Service documents, a decline in delivery by 8 to 10%. 46 states have been put on notice that it may be hard for them to try to complete mail-in ballots. So it's entirely possible we could end up having this go in a very bad direction. We have it in our power as a country to decide one way or another which way that goes in the next couple of weeks. And it's that we need to pay super careful attention to ensure that, in fact, the voting process works.
And that's been the center of controversy. Changes at the Postal Service, as we heard a representative, a Democratic representative there, talking about unplugging or removing or otherwise shutting down sorting machines. Concerns about, as you mentioned, data on slowdowns, people raising concerns about getting their prescription medications when they need them, livestock deliveries, getting stuck in sorting facilities. How do we sort out what's going on internally at the U.S. Postal Service with these changes?
And the one thing that's certain is that neither of the extremes are correct on this. Those who are saying that it's a conscious effort to destroy the Postal Service are wrong. On the other hand, those who argue that there's nothing to see here, move along, are also wrong. There are two streams coming together simultaneously. One is that we have this long-running problem of trying to find ways of making the Postal Service more efficient and more effective at a time when its mail volume is going down and the costs are going up. And so there are lots of changes they've been making along the way, including sometimes taking some of these sorting machines out of service when they're maybe not being used as effectively as they could be. But on the other hand, it is also very clear that the new Postmaster General has, in the last 6 weeks or so, made a series of decisions that have, in fact, slowed down the delivery of the mail. And so we have this collision of these long-running economic challenges and short-term decisions that have been made. The long-term challenges we can't solve, although we can put them on hold until after the election, but it's the short-term decisions that the Postmaster General has made that he has in his power and that we have the ability to be able to oversee that can be reversed between now and the election to ensure that the ballots get out and then they're returned in time to be counted.
It's become a partisan issue. It seems like with Democrats and Republicans, it might be hard to come up with the right solution at the U.S. Postal Service. But what would you recommend for a process of evaluating the needs of the Postal Service financially and otherwise, and coming up with a plan to ensure its sustainability in the future?
Well, the first thing is that this is not a good time to have this discussion because it is, as you pointed out, Rob, inevitably tied up in the question of whether or not the mails can and should be used to vote. More and more states have been moving to online voting. More and more states have been moving to postal service and mail ballots. And the evidence so far is that the the odds of fraud are very, 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 very tiny, so negligible as not really even to count. Given the fact that we have so much difficulty in trying to find ways of getting polling stations up and operational and having people have confidence to get out there to those polling stations to vote, expanding mail-in votes for this election is the best way to try to make sure that people who want to vote can. But after the election, we're going to have to come to the question of what is it we're going to do to try to shore up the Postal Service? Do we really expect it to at least break even? Do we expect that we're going to have to provide some public subsidy? How is the Postal Service going to make ends meet given competition from Amazon, and which has its own delivery service now, has its own airline even for that matter, as well as its own delivery trucks, and UPS and FedEx, not to mention what's happening with email and social media? What is, in fact, the future of the Postal Service, and what kind of financial circumstances should it try to set itself on a course for moving forward? And what should we do about this question about the pension funds moving forward as well? We really need a searching examination about the future of the Postal Service, but now, less than 2 months before the end stages of the campaign, that's not the time to have this discussion.
We continue our conversation about the U.S. Postal Service and its future with University of Texas Austin professor Don Kettle. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Questions you have for our guest about the management of the Postal Service, how it fits in to our U.S. government, problems facing, how it can be improved. Do you think changes need to be made, cutbacks in service or more funding for service from Congress? You can join in at 800-642-1234 or maybe email ideas at WPR.org. Don, I know one question with the Postal Service and people saying, well, maybe it can be replaced by UPS and things like that, is what people call the last mile thing. In some rural communities, like it's like broadband, it's not profitable to go to those sparsely populated areas. Do we have anything to replace the Postal Service in those parts of the country?
Right now, we really don't, because the reality is a couple things. One is there is this last mile principle, which is that one of the things that the Postal Service does increasingly is provides that last bit of service from a distribution center, maybe from, say, Amazon or your pharmacy to your doorstep. And so it's, given the fact the Postal Service serves every address in the country, it provides a way to get those essential services out to everybody's doorstep. So that's one thing that's important. The other thing as well is that it's important to understand a couple things about FedEx and UPS, which are terrific services, but one is that they're a whole lot more expensive. There's no way to be able to mail anything in UPS or FedEx for 55 cents. That just can't be done. And the other thing, too, is that if you use UPS, they will deliver some addresses and not others. There are some addresses that simply UPS will not serve, and it's maybe because they're way down the end of an alley or a street that is just too expensive for them to provide service to. They don't provide service to post office boxes, which a lot of people rely on. And so there's something about the fact that there is universal service to every address in the country for a low price that's long been the core from the very, very beginning, since Ben Franklin's days, about what it is that is the core of the Postal Service. And that's the problem with making an argument to replace it. It would cost a whole lot more money to mail things, and there are a lot of addresses where it wouldn't be possible to be able to do it. So the question is, what is it that we want to try to maintain here?
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jim is with us in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Hey, thank you, Professor Kettle. It's good to hear your voice. My question is basically, what's the history or the politics behind funding of the service, its pension for 75 years? Can you explain that? Do you have any knowledge to why they did that?
Sure. The basic question is this. The issue is that, in general, one of the things you do, as a basic principle of accounting, you don't want to discover as you wake up one morning and that you've got big pension obligations from people who have retired and that where you can't meet them. But the problem is that with the Postal Service, what they put together as a way to try to make a basic accounting decision back in 2006 has created an enormous financial obligation, because obviously there's some people who are going to be getting a pension in 75 years who haven't even been born yet. It is a basic principle that says if you stretch your contributions out over a long period of time, you don't end up finding yourself up against the wall when you finally need the money. But on the other hand, we're also paying now for pensions that are going to be not having to be paid out for a long time. If we wait for those pensions to come due, we may find ourselves under a big obligation. And a lot of companies, of course, find themselves in the same situation as well. But the Postal Service, because of the way in which it operates, is a very different kind of animal. And the fact that we shifted fairly quickly from a pay-as-you-go system to a system that says, let's put the money in the bank now for when we're going to need it later, has meant that we've had a big run-up of costs, and that's made it that much harder for the Postal Service to make ends meet. So kind of a complicated issue, good accounting reasons underlying it, but it's had huge implications now for the ability of the Postal Service to make ends meet.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Don Kettle from the University of Texas, looking at the U.S. Postal Service. Back to your calls now. Karen is with us in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hi. Could the speaker speak to the issue that I feel is going on across the nation, and is that another disenfranchisement for Native Americans and people of color, black and brown, is the Postal Service. For instance, Native Americans on reservations have practically no postal service.
Karen, thanks for the call. Concerns about a lack of access to the Postal Service, Don.
Sure. And that's a good question, Karen. It has to do not only with people of color on reservations, but more generally access to services, because much of the same is true for some of the for-profit provisions as well. And the Postal Service has this challenge, this demand, this mandate of making sure that everyone has access to mail. They have a struggle trying to be able to do that, but relying on solely for-profit organizations to fill in the gap would in all likelihood make that problem even worse. And so that's the challenge and really the underlying philosophy that has guided the Postal Service from the very, very, very beginning. I can mail anything anywhere for the same price. And Ben Franklin had a rate chart that he used that they put together and when they created the postal office back at the very beginning, and it's the same principle today. Challenge is trying to find ways of making good on that promise, but it really does lie at the core.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Brian now in Middleton. Brian, hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. What did you want to bring up, Brian?
Well, I'm just saying that I think the Postal Service is a very beneficial service. As your guest probably knows, it's written into the Constitution. It's worked very well. And regarding the idea that it's not profitable, what other agencies of the government are profitable? For example, is the Air Force making a profit?
Brian, thanks a lot. That brings it back to a question we kind of started with, Don, why this one service is expected to break even at least, and most others are not.
Well, we have a couple of operations like, say, the Tennessee Valley Authority, which sells electric power, and some government training programs that actually do make a profit. And believe it or not, there are a few places in the federal government that do. But the basic principle has been, since we changed it to under the argument to make government run more like a business, if it's an enterprise, let's find a way to raise enough money to be able to pay for the costs. And that was back in the days when we paid a whole lot more attention to the question of the size of the government deficit, which we really aren't doing much of these days. But it's that basic principle. Let's find a ways of making it work like an enterprise. But the problem here is finding a way to be able to do that. There are fierce battles in this business right now between not only the Postal Service, but Amazon fighting with FedEx, Amazon's fighting with UPS. They're battling with each other right now over what the rates are going to be for delivery for Christmas season this year. So there's this really unbelievable, difficult transition that's going on under the surface that for the most part we don't see, but it's really reared its head precisely at election season now, having to do with this question of the ability of the Postal Service to be able to deliver the ballots that we're going to be casting for the presidency.
Don, I'm going to give you 30 seconds for a 30-minute question. Once upon a time, a Republican governor and Democratic lawmakers could ask a professor to convene a blue ribbon commission. Everybody would take it seriously going in. Do we have the capacity to do that? Can we agree to try to sort things out together anymore?
The two parts of this question. One is, can we do it then? There really are answers that we could come up with this. Can we have people to actually follow the results? I think the answer is yes. The time, as I suggested, is not to try to do it in the middle of a presidential campaign, but doing precisely what you said, Rob, after the election to figure out how we can make sure that the Postal Service serves Americans is, I think, precisely what we most need to do after the political dust settles. But in the meantime, we have an obligation to make sure that people who want to vote by mail can, because that's one of the things that lies at the very fabric of the basic American experiment here.
Don, thanks again for joining us.
So good to be with you, Rob.
Don Kettle is a professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. We talked to him about the congressional testimony of Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, what's happening with the Postal Service, and the future of the institution.